You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Oh, welcome along, everyone. The William Hill Punt Podcast is upon us. We're going to go through the live and televised Premier League games in the company of Derek McGovern and Andy Excel, who's returning. He's with us on the podcast this week. We'll hear from the award-winning football journalist as well, Danny Taylor. He's going to be talking about his new book that's just come out, Kevin Keegan, My Life in Football, and reflecting on the Champions League matches midweek as well. We've got Alex Dunn giving a best bet in Europe, and of course, at the end of the podcast, we'll get the best bets in the Football League in the company of Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. That's all to come on the podcast. An action-packed podcast with five games to preview in the Premier League as well. And a returning Andy Excel. Andy, are you off the physio table?
I'm off the physio table. I'm springing about like a little lamb.
Have you got some good bets for us this weekend?
Well, I think I've got some views. Let's put it that way.
Derek McGovern joins us on the podcast as well. Derek, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Good, nice to hear that Sick Note is back.
Darren Anderson, yeah, the podcast.
Just waiting for Anderson to get a mention.
Derek, are you well?
Well, I was until last night's performance by Liverpool in Naples. Shocking, absolute shocking. But it'd been coming, that one, you know. So we'll no doubt talk more about that before we preview the City game later.
Well, we're 2.5 minutes in, Derek, and Mohamed Salah gets his first mention.
Hey, remember what I said at the start of the season? Give it by the end of October, he will no longer be first choice for Liverpool. I think I remember, Dave. Are you chortling at that? Are you still chortling now?
There's a lot of water that's got to go under the bridge yet for that to happen, Derek, but we'll see. Let's get stuck into this weekend then. We start on Friday night, actually. Friday night football, Brighton versus West Ham. Inseparable as far as the betting is concerned. 17-10 Brighton, the draw 9-4 West Ham in the betting at 17-10. Enhancements, as always, on the William Hill website and on the app. If you fancy Marko Arnautovic to score and West Ham to win, that's going to be popular. That's been boosted from 100-30 out to 4-1. If you fancy Brighton to win the game, Glenn Murray to score and Brighton to win was 14-5. That's been boosted out to 100-30. Glenn Murray, by the way, has 5 in his last 4 against West Ham, including 3 last season in this fixture as well. So that could be one if you fancy Brighton to win the game. I thought it was a very impressive performance from West Ham last week, Derek. It maybe got a bit lost in all the Mourinho's having a nightmare at Manchester United chat, but that 3-1 win means that West Ham have picked up 7 points from a possible 9. And what maybe has gone unnoticed is the fixture list they've had to start the season. It's been particularly difficult, and maybe they're even ahead of where was anticipated at the start of the season with 7 points.
Well, they're doing great now. I mean, those fixtures, you're right. If you played Liverpool away, played United, Chelsea, not that United, playing United is hard, but he played at United, Everton, and beaten United and Everton and drawn with Chelsea in their last three games, last three league games, and they're 17-10 to beat Brighton. And the only reason I'm not having some of that, Dave, is that I'm having all of it. It's a certainty, absolute certainty. Already, I've got the weekend nap. Although last week I started off with the best bet ever, West Ham to beat Man United, and then I napped something else which lost. I think they're great to watch, West Ham. Right now, they seem to have all the hallmarks of a team managed by Kevin Keegan, with Ozzy Ardiel as his number two. They're great going forward. And they seem to have tightened up a bit at the back too. They look like a proper team now. And let me give you a bet from left field. I haven't even looked at the odds yet, but I suspect you'll get great odds. Right now, Eden Hazard looks a certainty to be player of the year if he carries on in this vein, right? You know, big if, I suppose. But I tell you, someone will run him close, Marko Arnautovic. What a player that guy is. Every time I watch him, I'm thinking, how is he playing for West Ham? He's tremendous. And I'll be back in West Ham at these kind of odds against an awful lot of teams this season.
Will you be having some of that 4-1 then, Derek? I mentioned Arnautovic to score in a West Ham win, 4-1.
I will. He's a tremendous player. And Pellegrini seems to be doing everything right now, the manager. He got a lot of stick when they lost 4 on a spin earlier on. But he's blooding in a lot of new players, and it's going to take time for it to gel. He hasn't taken that long, to be honest, only 4 games. He's one of those managers, Pellegrini, isn't he? When his team loses, you can't understand a word he says, and then when they win, he becomes Laurent Olivier. These foreign managers, when they want to speak a foreign language fluently, should do what I do. I fly to Spain and speak English. Perfect.
Thank you, Derek. By the way, West Ham's last 7 Premier League wins have come by at least a 2-goal margin. Their last 3 wins have all finished 3-1 as well. 3-1 in the game, by the way, is 16-1. But West Ham -1 on the handicap is available at 9-2. When if you're following that statistic, that might look like a spot of value as well. Andy, William Hill... Andy Excel, 17-10 each of 2. Is that correct in your view?
Why not?
I just wonder whether Derek's made a compelling case for West Ham and whether they should be a bit shorter.
I said a couple of weeks ago about West Ham. I think they'll be a momentum team this season. When everything's going well, they will look like they're flying. But if they have a couple of bad results, I can see them going through a terrible run as well. And I'm not really changing on that. I think they'll be decent. They'll be mid-table, but I'm not completely sold yet. And the games between these two teams last season, Brighton won 6-1 on aggregate. Now, I know that's a different team, essentially, with West Ham, but it's still there. Brighton has done that. Having said that, Brighton's last 2 wins at home, they've only won 2 of their last 8 at home, and both of those were against Man United, unbelievably. But that's probably not that talking much up this day. So, I really don't have a great view on this. I probably would just go with West Ham being on a good run at the moment. But I wouldn't put you off Glenn Murray scoring either, because he always does against them.
Yeah, Brighton 17-10, the draw 9-4, the Hammers 17-10. Are you sitting on that? You're just going West Ham win by a narrow margin then, Andy, given they're in good form?
If they win, they'll probably win quite comfortably, but I can't guarantee it. Okay. Do you know what I mean? I'm not completely sold on them yet.
Manchester United versus Newcastle up next then. This is a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. United are 47-100 to win this game. The draw 100-30. Newcastle in the betting at 6-1. Enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win was 6-5. That's been enhanced to 11-8. If you fancy Newcastle to go there and spring a surprise... Newcastle to score over 1 goal in the match was 7-2. That's been enhanced to 4-1. The clock is ticking on Jose Mourinho's tenure at Manchester United. They failed to beat Valencia at home on Tuesday in the Champions League. That was the latest misstep in a number of them for a misfiring Manchester United side. And that's now 4 without a win for Mourinho's men. And you look at that team on paper, Andy, or I did anyway, and I thought, that looks pretty decent, but they're just not producing.
No, he's gone odds on to be the next manager to leave his post, Mr. Mourinho. He's gone from the special one to the special done. I think, how would Mr. Benitez love it to be the one that gets him sacked? So you just can't back United at the moment. I wouldn't back him with counterfeit. But I can't really get into Newcastle away from home either. So, me, I think it's a draw. I think it'll play for a draw, Newcastle, and they might get it, and that might be enough to send Jose on his way.
100-30, the draw in the game. All these Newcastle players needed Derek to start performing. It was a slap-up meal, and they've been bought one by Mike Ashley. During the week, he took the squad and Rafa Benitez out for pizza and pasta. That'll solve all the problems at Newcastle.
That's right, 22 slap-up meals, and then he bought some for the players as well, actually. I don't think that's going to solve the problems. But United have got bigger ones. I've been trying to come up with reasons why they might finally win this weekend, and the best I can come up with is that their opponents are Newcastle. Jose Mourinho is the first man in the world to find out that his problems have got worse after spending £500 million. I'm hoping to be the second man, by the way. I mean, he's been a joke. Every player under him has got worse. United are losing their identity under him. No surprise, because they're losing everything, it seems. You can't back him at 1-2, and he's right. I mean, Man United wanted to beat a Newcastle team that look as though they're going to go down at the moment. You know, in days gone by, it would be mortgage material, but it's easily skipped material, I think. I think Rafa's going to go there. He knows that Newcastle aren't dangerous going forward, but he knows how to set up a team to frustrate opponents. And these days, it's easy to frustrate United. I think I've got to go under. Well, in fact, I won't go unders on the goals. I'll go in there. Both teams to score market, no, is 8-11. I think that's home and hosed. In fact, I've got a feeling neither team will score, but at least taking the 8-11 gives you a bit of leeway.
Just to illustrate Manchester United's problems defensively this season, they've conceded 12 goals in their 7 Premier League games so far. It took them 18 games last season to concede 12 goals, so that just puts into perspective how Manchester United have struggled at the back this season. I do look at those prices though, chaps, and think if you price this match up, say, last year, Manchester United would be 1-5, 1-6 to win this game, and they're touching 1-2. Andy, I can imagine Manchester United being popular at that price. I know they're not in fantastic form at the moment, but they're taking on a struggling Newcastle side and edging towards 1-2 at home against the Toon.
Well, we're top price, so we're looking to lay United, and we want to get as much of it in the book as possible. They played 5 at home this season. They've got 1 win, which was a bit fortuitous against Leicester. They've drawn 3, and that got stuffed by Spurs. So, you know, I just can't have it at home, and neither can we. So we just, come on, as many people as you want get on that price for us.
Been a fair run of form on the European Naps front in recent weeks, and I'm going to try and point you in the direction of a winner on Saturday in Germany in a game I think the traders have got completely wrong from a goals point of view. It's Bayern Munich at home to Borussia Mönchengladbach, and Bayern's last 5 games in all competitions now have been under 2.5 goals. They're not the free-flowing side that scored 6, 6 and 5 in consecutive games towards the back end of last season. And they come up against a Gladbach side who, yes, do score a few, and yes, concede a few. But under 2.5 goals is 12-5 here. That is huge. I'm going to play it a little bit safer from a Naps point of view and go with even money under 3.5 goals in Bayern against Gladbach. But to be fair, I'd back under 3.5 at evens, under 2.5 at 12-5. I just don't think there's going to be many goals in this one.
On to Sunday's games then. We'll start with Fulham versus Arsenal. Fulham are 18-5 to win the game. The draw 100-30. Arsenal in the betting at 4-6. The enhancements, Alexander Mitrovic to score in a Fulham win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 8-1. He's got a tremendous recent record at home for Fulham. He's scored a 9 in his last 10 league appearances at Craven Cottage. That doesn't include the playoffs. That's a stat from Opta. And if you fancy Mitrovic to score in a Fulham win, that's been enhanced to 8. If you're looking for Arsenal to continue their fine form, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score in an Arsenal win was 11-8. That's been boosted to 6-4. Derek, we're recording this piece prior to their meeting with Carabag, but they've won their last 5 Premier League games now, and maybe slightly fortuitously, they've won their last 2-0 as well.
Most of those games, though, were against teams who come under the heading relegation threatened. The only exception is Ricardo, who come under the heading relegation certainties. I think it's just a tougher one for Arsenal, especially after that long trip to Azerbaijan you mentioned on Thursday. Yeah, you know, I've been wondering why Andy might know, why do Arsenal bother about Europe these days? I know they have little problem escaping the group, but the problems start then. I've decided that they are the Kerry Katona of Europe. I don't know which Arsenal fan is there. A single Arsenal fan that's going to go to Baku tonight to watch them in that game? I don't think there is. Half the players have stayed at home as it is. I thought Fulham were sure things at Everton last Saturday, which tells you all you need to know, Dave, about my knowledge of Fulham and of sure things. But they haven't done too much wrong at home this season, and this is probably a good time to face Arsenal, i.e. with Mesut Ozil playing for them. So I've got to go for Fulham. I know they cost me a few bob last week. They cost me a nap as well, a wasted nap. But 4-1 to beat Arsenal. Don't get fooled by Arsenal's run of wins. They've played nobody. This is a tougher nut to crack.
Okay, Fulham 18-5 for Derek. Andy, are Arsenal playing brilliantly at the moment, or are they just getting a little bit lucky?
I think you're closer than they're playing brilliantly. It's still a work in progress for him, but it is going in the right direction. To answer Derek's question about Europe, well, Emery did it in the League Cup as well. He's playing stronger teams. He wants to win every game. The Wenger era of experimentation has gone. He's out there to win every game he can play. I think, coming back to this game, I think Fulham are a talking horse. I think they are relegation threatened. I don't think they're that good. And I think Arsenal will beat them. And just to sweeten Derek's pill even better, Ozil scored three in his last four appearances, and he's going to score again. So Ozil and Arsenal to win is what I'm looking at 13-5.
Very good. Ozil to score in an Arsenal win. By the way, they seem to have unearthed a gem in Lucas Torreira, Andy. You look at the stats when he's on the pitch compared to when he's not on the pitch, and both of Arsenal's clean sheets in the league this season have come when he's played the full 90 minutes. They seem to have found one with him.
Oh, I think he's brilliant. I think he's exceptional. I think he'll struggle in his first season to get to sort of player of the year, but and Arsenal probably won't do enough to justify that. But I think he's an exceptional player.
Okay, so Arsenal to win with Ozil to score for Andy, and Derek going with Fulham to win the game. On to Southampton versus Chelsea. This is a 2:15 kickoff on Sunday. Southampton 9-2 to win the match. The draw 3-1. Chelsea in the betting at 8-13. Chelsea to win both halves was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. If you fancy Eden Hazard to score in a Chelsea win, which is always pretty popular, 17-10 enhanced to 15-8. And as is the case on all the matches this weekend in the Premier League, this is hashtag your odds as well. So if there's a bet that you like that isn't priced up yet, do tweet at William Hill using that hashtag your odds, and the traders will price the market up. I still think, Andy, that Southampton are value in that relegation market at 4-1. They've got a poor manager in Mark Hughes. They've only picked up 5 points from their opening seven games. And they've got a cast of workmanlike, been around the block a few times strikers as well. The fixture list has been kind to them up to this point. I'm all aboard the Southampton relegation bus, Andy.
I'm driving it. I think they're this year's Swansea. I've said that a couple of times. I just think they're a club who think they're going to stay in the Premier League just because they are, and I don't think they're good enough. I'm not changing my mind about that. What I am changing my mind about is Chelsea. I've kind of been negative about them for quite a long period now, but I really like where they're going under the manager. They're getting the right results. I think this 8-13 is one of the best prices out there this week. Chelsea have won the last six meetings between these two teams. Southampton haven't won at home in their last four, and have put a goal scorer in there for you. Olivier Giroud scored three in the two games against them last season, and he scored two in the previous two games he played for Arsenal. So he's got five in the last four when he's played against Southampton. So him and Chelsea to win is where I'd be going along those lines.
Yeah, I'm not backing Olivier Giroud to score a goal. I'm sorry, Andy, I'm just not backing that.
This is the one against Southampton, I'm telling you.
Eden Hazard, I do like for him to score and Chelsea to win 15-8. And one damning statistic that comes from Opta when you're analysing this match: Southampton haven't won in 25 Premier League games against Big Six opposition. That's since they beat Liverpool, Man City and Spurs in three consecutive games a few years ago. And Mark Hughes just doesn't like playing against the big teams. Never sets his teams up correctly against the top teams, and he comes unstuck. And I agree with everything that Andy's said there, Derek. I think Chelsea 8-13 is banker material this weekend.
It is, or be a bit more intrepid, 8-5 to win minus a goal, so win by two or more.
Yeah,
they will do. I like what I've seen from Chelsea. I thought they were great last week against Liverpool. They played Vidi, or they're playing Vidi on Thursday. On Sunday, they'll be Rennie and Vici, because it's an absolute certainty. Southampton, you mentioned, haven't won at home this season, and they played Burnley, Brighton and Leicester there. And, you know, This is a far tougher nut to crack. Yeah, it's one of the bankers of the season, this one.
Yeah, straightforward. Chelsea beat Southampton. No doubt we'll have this played back to us next weekend. Liverpool versus Manchester City next. The big game of the weekend, obviously. This is in my opinion, the most eagerly anticipated match of the season so far. Liverpool at Anfield, 31-20 to win the game. The draw 5-2 with Manchester City, 17-10. Liverpool to win both halves was 11-2. That's been enhanced to 13-2. And if you fancy Sergio Aguero to lead the line by example for City, for him to score and City to win, it was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Both these teams locked together on 19 points in the Premier League table so far. And in my opinion, Derek, this is the litmus test for Liverpool. I think we all know that City are going to rack up something around about the 100-point mark again. And it feels imperative for Liverpool to take at least a point from this game to mark themselves as genuine contenders. That's how I see it anyway, Derek. How do you see it as a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, if City win this, you may as well wrap up, give them gift wrap them the title now, because it won't just be the 3 points they go clear of Liverpool. It will be the impact of a win at Anfield. I mean, Liverpool, the only team that lowered their colours last season, and they beat them so often. If we beat them again this weekend, we get to keep them. But they're not going to beat City this weekend. I don't think that's how this sounds. I think they've won, seven games out of eight or six out of, they're unbeaten now. Both of them are locked at the top of the table. But neither side has hit the heights yet. Liverpool certainly haven't. And Man City have been, in my eyes, below par. They're not the same team without De Bruyne. I thought they would laugh off his absence because he got so many stars. But I think they look a pale shadow of City without him. And this is a big test for them. But they're lucky because they're running up against Liverpool, who are absolutely atrocious at the moment. That performance against Napoli in midweek, it was coming, because I've seen Liverpool virtually every game this term. And I've yet to see them fully firing. They've got Salah playing, who last season when he was scoring all these goals, I said to you, he's a passenger. Well, he was scoring goals then, so probably worth his place in the side. He's a passenger now and not scoring. He cannot play for Liverpool in this game, because if he is, whatever you're going to back City, whatever you're going to put on City, double it, because they'll be playing with 10 men, Liverpool. That's how strongly I feel about it. He looks to me like another Fernando Torres, Salah. He's going the same way. I think City are real good things here. Even when they got pulverised in that, it was a 3-0 at Anfield in that Champions League quarter-final. It was 15 minutes of sensational football from Liverpool, but the rest of the game, City battered them. I think they're a better team and they'll win this. I'm all over City.
17-10, City to win. Derek, as a Liverpool fan, very negative about the chances of the Reds on Sunday. They are unbeaten in their last 24 home league games. That's obviously the longest current run in the Premier League. And they do tend to perform against big six opposition as well, Andy. I just get the feeling to use maybe NFL parlance here. The handicappers in NFL talk about revenge games being a significant factor when it comes to pricing up matches. When a team's been humbled by strong opposition and then they see them the next season, they're up for that game more. And I think that's going to be the case with Pep Guardiola here. I think he'll have gone into minutiae to make sure his team are set up perfectly to combat Liverpool this weekend. I think this is a huge game for him as a manager.
I think you've hit on something there, that Man City have got beaten four times by these last year and they won't want to be beat by him again. So, and I think that I'm not as negative about Liverpool as Derek is, but I think City will edge this. There'll be goals in it. 16 goals in the last four games between the two and 23 in the last six. So over 3.5 goals is 13-8. Another one I'll throw in there, Leroy Sané scored 4 in the last 5 against Liverpool. He's 27-10 any time. So that looks a decent price to me. Just one other thing I'll throw in on this game. How do you think Man United fans are tuning into this on Sunday? Watching these two play out for the title?
Yeah, yeah.
When they're a million miles behind. And if they haven't got a result before, the clamour for Mourinho to go will just grow and grow and grow.
I mean,
it's their two greatest rivals, isn't it? Playing out for a title when they're nowhere.
Is it too early to say that, playing out for a title when we're only eight games into the season?
I think so, because I think Chelsea are a good side, but I don't think they'll maintain it through the season at the level that these two will.
Do you think Manchester City win this game now, Andy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So City to win, and maybe City to win in over 3.5 goals in the match. City to win and both teams to score, I think, is very interesting at 7-2 as well. Okay, so both the guys with City in that encounter, a fantastic game coming up 4:30 on Sunday. Let's finish with the Naps then, chaps. Derek, I'll let you lead off this week then. After I know you were agonising last week and you were furious with yourself, Derek.
Yeah, I was, because having started off saying what a great bet West Ham was, to actually go for Fulham at the end of it, after I put the phone down on the end of the bulletin, I was kicking myself. I thought, why have I done that? Madness. It won't happen again. I've got an absolute banker. You're talking about the best game of the weekend being Liverpool City. Well, I'll tell you what the worst game of the weekend is going to be. Burnley against Huddersfield. Both matches finished 0-0 last season. But Burnley are 11-10 to win this game. I can't see how they cannot possibly win it. They know how to win a game, Burnley. Huddersfield don't. Huddersfield don't seem to know how to do anything. So 11-10, Burnley nailed on.
Okay, 11-10 Burnley for Derek. Andy?
That was one that was in consideration. There's another one that I put in a similar category. Leicester at home to Everton. Normally, if the two teams are seen as level, the home team's about 11-10. Leicester are bigger than that and they're better than Everton, so Leicester for me.
5-4 Leicester City to beat Everton. I'm going with Manchester City. I agree with what you two... gentlemen, your assessment of that game at Anfield. I think Manchester City win, but I think there is goals in this game as well. I'm going City to win and both teams to score as my nap at 7-2 this weekend, and that bumps that treble up to 20.26-1. Burnley at home to Huddersfield 11-10, Leicester at home to Everton at 5-4, Man City to win at Anfield and both teams to score in the match at 7-2, 20-1 that treble. Thank you, chaps. Thank you, Derek.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Andy.
It's a pleasure. I'm off to run around the garden now.
We're going to be speaking to Danny Taylor about Kevin Keegan. His new book is out, and we're going to reflect on the Champions League in a couple of moments' time, so stay tuned. Looking forward to catching up with Danny on the other side of this.
Scratch of the Day is back with free bets, bet boosts and loads more up for grabs. Just scratch and match three to win every Saturday and Sunday. Look out for your chance to win on williamhill.com and on the app.
Now, as promised, it's a warm welcome to the Guardian's chief football writer, Danny Taylor, who joins us now on the podcast. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Danny. Good to have you on the podcast.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just back from a trip down to London to saw Spurs-Barcelona last night. And so, obviously, when you see Messi playing like that, you sort of realise, you know, the job is a privilege. You know, sometimes you forget that occasionally. But then, you know, you see that sort of rare display and, you know, it's a great job sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking that. That was going to be my leading line, actually, how much of a privilege it is on a night like that, because... Not only did you get to see Lionel Messi in action, he was absolutely sublime, but even Rakitic, the way he struck that ball for the second Barcelona goal was just simply sensational.
Yeah, I mean, it was an unbelievable goal, wasn't it? I mean, you could see he was going to shape up to shoot, but you're thinking, you know, the ball's bouncing so high, you know, you need incredible technique to get it on target, but obviously he just, you know, he caught it perfectly. And you know, it always looks good, doesn't it, when it hits the woodwork and then goes in, you know, God, always makes it look a little extra spectacular. So yeah, I mean, the strange thing is, funnily enough, you know, at the end of the game, there was nobody talking about that goal, really. Everyone was just sort of, you know, just talking about Messi. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's the best I've ever seen him play, but, I mean, I wrote a line in my match report saying, you know, he looked like he was determined to sort of show Spurs, you know, the Spurs have been playing football for 136 years. And he sort of looked determined to sort of, you know, enforce the point that, you know, maybe they've never actually played anyone with his football powers in that time, you know. So, yeah. You know, it was incredible performance, basically. Right from the start, you could just tell that he was on it.
5-1 Barcelona are to win the Champions League. I'm intrigued now, Danny, that you say it wasn't the best you've ever seen Lionel Messi play. When was the best you've ever seen him play live?
Oh, blimey, that's a difficult one. Well, I'd probably qualify that by saying that I've seen him play in bigger games, you know, in the knockout stage of the Champions League, and with respect to Spurs against better European opponents. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately for Spurs last night, you know, they were missing Eriksen, Dele Alli. You know, the goalkeeper was back from six games out and looked, to be generous to him, I suppose you could say he looked a bit rusty, you know, for that first goal, you know, sort of coming out, his decision making was poor. So, you know, to missing sort of five or six players as Spurs were, it kind of played into Barca's hands, I suppose, a little bit. But you know, I've seen Messi play like that against Real Madrid, and you know, in the knockout stages when it really, really matters. I mean, I think back to the final against Manchester United in Rome. You know, he was absolutely superb that night as well, really. But I mean, as were all of Barcelona. I think a lot of the United players will say it's the best team they ever came against. So, but yeah, I mean, Spurs found out the hard way, didn't they? Really, you know, that life at the top's not easy.
The other game last night was Napoli versus Liverpool, and Jurgen Klopp has blamed himself for that defeat and the way the team was set up. They were beaten 1-0 in Naples. I suppose you're just catching up on that match, Danny, to a certain extent, but Liverpool weren't at their best, and Mohamed Salah, his slightly subdued start to the season continues.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, I wasn't there last night, but I was at the Chelsea game, and I saw them go down and beat Spurs convincingly at Wembley a few weeks ago. And, you know, Liverpool have been massive, really impressive. And even in that draw against Chelsea, you know, I know they only equalised in, you know, I think it was the 88th minute or 89th minute, but you know, they took the game to Chelsea from the first minute, basically. And you could just sort of see after 10 minutes, you know, this is a really good team. So I was quite surprised, you know, obviously I was at Spurs last night, I was quite surprised to hear that it wasn't great last night. And then obviously you sort of look at the result, you know, the last three results, they lost to Chelsea in the Carabao Cup, which I think is a blow for them, really. You know, when you think that they haven't actually won anything, and there is that kind of, you know, it's always going to be chucked at Klopp, you know, all the way through. So now you look at the Premier League, the Champions League, and the FA Cup. And the Premier League, you know, they've got Manchester City to get past, and however brilliant Liverpool might be, Manchester City might yet be that extra shade. So, you know, and then you're looking at the Champions League. You know, be extraordinary achievement if Liverpool can win the Champions League, and then the FA Cup. So I think that defeat to Chelsea was quite a blow. And then a draw at Chelsea still in the league is a good result. And then last night was a poor result. So it's a strange one because they have been playing well. Salah, as you say, it's really his finishing. He's a lot of his other play. He's still sort of troubling defenders. He still was. Create, you know, being a bit of a headache for the Chelsea defence last weekend, but obviously he's kind of just that extra sort of touch that he's sort of missing, you know, that he had all last season. But there's a part of me also thinks, you know, is it fair just to expect him to, you know, to be getting another 40 goals or whatever it was last season? You know, it's that was an incredible haul, and you know, it'd be a very high expectation to expect him to do the same again.
The other two teams that were in action on Tuesday night, from a domestic perspective in the Champions League, Manchester City edged past Hoffenheim. That was a huge result for Manchester City as well, given they lost their first game in the group to Lyon. To get that winner late on, a big moment for Manchester City.
Well, when the draw was made, I must be honest, you know, you saw Man United's group and you think, you know, that's a difficult group, and Liverpool are in a great group, and then you look at Tottenham, you know, Tottenham have got Barcelona, Inter Milan. You sort of look at Man City and you think, you know, you wouldn't say it was a shoe-in, and obviously they then go and lose the first game. But, you know, I was looking through those fixtures thinking, you know, which ones do I want to go and watch? And I must admit, Manchester City didn't really come into the equation before the group started, because I just couldn't see any way that Manchester City won't go through, you know. But it's a bit strange. There's something in the relationship between Manchester City and the Champions League hasn't really quite clicked yet. You know, I'm sure that, bearing in mind the ambition of the club and the owners, I think that must be the sort of the one really big disappointment for them so far. You know, they've only had one semi-final.
Yeah.
In that semi-final, they were pretty turgid, to be honest. They really didn't give it a particularly good go in that semi final. And then apart from that, you know, they keep getting these bad results. I mean, don't get me wrong, that was obviously a good way to come back. I'd still be absolutely staggered if they don't get through. I'm sure they'll qualify, and I don't really see there should be too many problems.
Do you think there's anything in the fact that they haven't got maybe a rich history in the European Cup? You think about big European nights at Anfield. I'm sure you've attended many of them, Danny, and you don't get that same sort of atmosphere at the Etihad.
Well, I certainly think that with some fans. I mean, I live in Manchester. I speak to a lot of City fans, and a lot of them don't seem really fussed. And I can't tell if I'm patronising, but you know, I have been to loads of these European nights at Anfield. Also Old Trafford, and my own team is Nottingham Forest. I can remember, just some of the best atmospheres I've ever heard. Not even in the European Cup, but just like the UEFA Cup, and just, you know, it just seems that other clubs really embrace it, and it's just some, you know, they are extra special those nights, or they should be. Don't get me wrong, there have been a couple of those occasions with City. You know, there have been, you know, I've seen them beat Barcelona at home, and you know, it's not like they haven't experienced it, but it's just, I have had this sort of debate with a few sort of mates of mine who are City fans, and they seem far more interested in the Premier League than the Champions League, and my point is, well, you could actually have both.
Yeah.
It's not just, I mean, Anfield, yeah, it's true, you know, I mean, I sometimes as a journalist get a bit of stick from other fans sort of, who get a bit sick and tired of people going on about the atmosphere at Anfield, and I'm saying, well, it doesn't sound, you know, like you've actually experienced it then, because it is actually true. On the European nights, it is very special. And also, I would say, Old Trafford, when you get to the latter stages of the competition, you know, certainly in the Ferguson years anyway, you know, we've not really had that so much since Fergie left, obviously. But City, it's they're kind of getting to know each other, aren't they? And it's taking longer than people imagined. But maybe it is just because it's the early stages, but I still find it slightly strange. You know, they don't sell out at home often. For the European games, certainly in the group stages, and it does sort of almost feel very secondary.
Danny, your pick for the Champions League at this stage, have you got an inkling as to who's going to be go the distance?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I mean, when you see Messi play like that, you find it hard to look past Barcelona. But equally, you know, Spurs did score two. Barca were top of the Spanish league, but the Spanish journalists, I know, say, you know, before last night they hadn't won in three games and they weren't looking as good as normal. But I'll go for Barcelona, but not with great authority, I have to say. But I mean, Real Madrid, you know, it's all the usual suspects, isn't it, these days? I think basically, the Champions League has reached a stage where by the kind of quarterfinals, you normally know six of the eight teams that are going to be in there, really. So you know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus will obviously be a decent team if Ronaldo starts firing properly. Well, they already are a decent team. That's probably a bad word to choose, but you know, can they kind of go that extra mile? I'll go for Barcelona.
5-1 Barcelona to win the Champions League. A big week for you as well, Danny, with the release of Kevin Keegan's autobiography that you've written, My Life in Football. Kevin Keegan, I think, is a man that means different things to people in different eras. I'm early 30s, Danny, and I remember him from his time managing Newcastle Football Club and the flamboyance he brought to that club. And the "I would love it" quote is obviously synonymous with Keegan's spell at Newcastle as well. And you've been able to delve into different parts of Keegan's life, both as a player and as a manager.
Yeah, and I say one of the things I've really enjoyed, you know, from obviously working closely with him for the last 18 months, is that Kevin is one of those blokes that can sort of, you know, he doesn't take himself too seriously, but basically, you know, one of his family friends has got "I love it" as his ringtone, and you know, he lives in Manchester, so he obviously gets a lot of, you know, he meets a lot of Man United fans. You know, that the myth about there's no Manchester United fans in Manchester is always, well, it's that, really, it's a myth, you know. So, but you know, Kevin, you know, I'm sure, I can't even begin to think how many times he's heard that saying, you know, sort of replayed to him and everything. But, you know, he'll always have a laugh and joke about it. And, you know, I think what you make a very good point, you know, it is a... you know, I'm the same as yourself. I think a lot of people will always remember him from that time at Newcastle. You know, one of the, you know, it's quite a legendary sort of time for English football as a whole, really. You know, Newcastle 12 points ahead. Where he'd found them was unbelievable, really. You know, when he came back to football as Newcastle's manager, you know, he'd spent the seven previous years living in Marbella and hardly taking a match. You know, he went back to Newcastle United as manager. He didn't know the players' names or anything, and they're in the bottom three of what is now the Championship, and he was told by the owner, you know, if we get relegated, that is the end for Newcastle United. You know, we will go bust. And so he actually, you know, he took them up in, I think, in 4 years. He basically kept them up. Then he got them promoted as champions, and then obviously went into the Premier League. And I think they finished third in his first season.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years later, they were, you know, they obviously had the. The infamous 12-point lead that Manchester United clawed back, and then obviously the meltdown, but or the rant, which is how he describes it. But before then, what people forget perhaps is that, yeah, this is the only English footballer ever to win two Ballon d'Ors. You know, he had 6 years at Liverpool in which he won everything. The European Cup final was his last game. Then he went to Hamburg. People still say that English footballers don't do particularly well abroad. I think there's a lot of young kids who are sort of showing that can be changed now. But I think Kevin was the first person to, you know, to disprove that theory. You know, that's where he won his European Football Year awards, and you know, it was one of the nice things. I actually got to hold them, you know, in the Ballon d'Ors. And I mean, I've seen, and Kevin would say the same. You know, I've seen better pub billiards trophies, basically. You know, it's just, you know, the old Ballon d'Or is just. But you can see the glue that's sort of holding it on. If you shake it, it's got like a, I think there's a bolt loose at the bottom, basically. You know, so I don't think it was taken quite as seriously as it is now. And I'm not sure Ronaldo or Messi would be particularly impressed if you got the same standard of trophy. But I think, you know, the bigger point is this is the guy who won that twice, basically.
Yeah.
And he was second, and he was runner up the third year. So, you know, that's not a bad achievement even before you go into the management years. You know, he had 4 years at Manchester City as manager, and I think that makes him the longest serving manager at Manchester City since the 1970s. But, you know, people just remember the Newcastle times, really, and then the period that didn't go so well for him when he was at England.
Yeah, you talk about him being a pioneer in terms of a footballer, and more kudos for him putting up with Mike Ashley at Newcastle as well, Danny, because I think Newcastle fans, they've been behind three managers in the last 15 years, Kevin Keegan being one of them, Chris Hughton being the other one, and now Rafa Benitez, and all three have been treated... With a little bit of lack of dignity, maybe, by Mike Ashley.
Well, I certainly know, you know, I know the ins and outs of Kevin's story and what happened there, and he describes it as a tragic comedy, really, and I think that's, you know, a good word to describe it. You know, just all sorts of stories about being undermined and lied to and deceived, and in the end, you know, he took Newcastle to court, and the tribunal decided that, yes, I think the phrase they used was that Newcastle had repeatedly misled the public, the fans, the media, and, you know, repeatedly misled is a posh way of saying lied to and deceived, you know. So yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of horror stories, you know.
Are they all in the book then, Dan?
Yeah, they're all. I mean, just trying to give you an example. I mean, Luka Modric is a classic. You know, he just won the World Footballer of the Year. You know, Keegan was basically arranged to get his agent up to the northeast to sort of, you know, to try and sign him. He's 21, 22, you know, what a player he would have been for Newcastle. And, you know, the guy who was meant to be there as the transfer specialist, who in another time admitted he'd never heard of Per Mertesacker, this is meant to be the transfers expert at Newcastle, decided that Luka Modric was too lightweight for English football, you know. And you think, you know, however many Champions Leagues later and World Cup Player of the Year and, sorry, World Cup Footballer of the Tournament, rather, you know, you've just all sorts of stuff like that, really, you know. Some real horror stories about the way it was, you know, and it ended with, I mean, I think the final straw, and there's so many examples I could give you, the final straw was basically when they signed two players as quotes a favour for two South American agents, and that, you know, that was a multi-million pound deal basically in terms of the wages, the agent fees, and I think you know, Kevin's got an acute sense of what's right and what's wrong, and just didn't think that deal was right whatsoever basically. And you know, I've never heard of players being, you know, being bought as a favour for agents, and, you know, manager being told, you know, you don't have to play him, you don't even have to let him set foot in St James's Park. You know, this is at a time when Newcastle's fans are being told, you know, they have to pay high season ticket prices to sort of get players in because of money's tight and everything, you know. So, you know, Kevin, I think knowing what I know and how quickly everything went pear-shaped there, I think it was only within two or three weeks that he realised that he was dealing with some very, how can I put it, untrustworthy people.
Yeah.
I think he actually did very well to last the 8 or 9 months that he did.
OK, thank you, Danny. And that book's available online and at all reputable bookshops?
Yeah, and probably a few bad ones as well. It's it's out today, so which I completely forgot about, to be honest, until someone texted me earlier. But yeah, it's out today. I mean, to be fair, I think it's been in a few shops already at the start of the week. But officially, it's out today. So yeah, it's available online, you know, all the usual places. And you know, hopefully people enjoy it.
I'm sure they will. Kevin Keegan, fascinating character. Thank you, Danny, for your company on this podcast. If you want to follow Danny on Twitter, by the way, you can do @DTGuardian. Danny, hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast later on in the season.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Thank you, Danny. And we're going to finish off the podcast with a look at the Football League.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and in the Championship this week, I like the look of Sheffield United minus a goal against Hull at 17-10, Wigan at 2-1 away at Preston, and Leeds at 11-8 at home against Brentford. But my nap is over 3.5 goals in the West Brom-Reading match. It looks obvious, doesn't it? West Brom's matches averaged over 3.9 goals per game. They had a 2-2 midweek, and their home form so far this season has been chocked full of overs on the goals. 3 goals, 8 goals, 3 goals, 6 goals, and 2 goals. That looks good. And when you fold in Reading's away games, 1-0, 4-2, 5-4, over 3.5 at 7-4 looks like fantastic value. Overs has been where my profit has been so far this season. So take a look at that. That's my Championship nap. Very best of luck. Let's hand over to Gav Puszczalowski for his thoughts on League One.
Before I get to my nap selection, just a couple of mentions for two teams who seem too big this weekend. Accrington at 23-10 to win away at Shrewsbury. Accrington going great this season. Peterborough 21-10 to win at home to Barnsley. 21-10 at home. I know Barnsley going well. So are Peterborough. Home side 21-10 seems massive. But my nap selection is Charlton at 11-10 to win at home to Coventry. Charlton have not had the best of weeks. They lost 5-3 at Scunthorpe and drawing 2-2 away at Luton. They did take the lead in both those games, but Charlton still scored 5 goals in those 2 games away from home, and that is Charlton all over. They are scoring plenty. They've actually scored 12 in their last 5 games, and at home recently, 2-1 victory against Plymouth and 3-2 at home to Wickham. They've actually fallen behind twice in those games and come from behind to win. So this could be a bit of a goal fest. It could be Charlton and over 2.5 goals. It could be Coventry to take the lead and Charlton to come from behind and get something from the game. Charlton are just an average run-in-the-mill League One side away from home. Couple of draws, couple of defeats and a victory at Oxford. I think this is the sternest test that Coventry have had on the travels so far this season, and I expect them to fall short. My nap is Charlton at 11-10 to win at home to Coventry City. Looking at League Two is Al Ross.
Harry Keel's done a surprisingly good job of turning Notts County around in his month there, so this week I am backing the club who are fifth bottom and away from home, but I'm doing it for good reason and I am boosting the price with goals. So, Keel's side were embarrassed by Exeter in his first game in charge, but 8 of their 9 points this season have been gained in an unbeaten 4-game run since, winning the last two. And this weekend, this informed side are at Macclesfield, who are still without a win. Yes, they did our nap last week by holding Forest Green Rovers to claim just a 3rd point of the season, but I'm not put off. Forest Green had more than 60% possession and 7 shots on target, and they're not in as good a form as Notts County, so Notts County for the win. But the 1 week I backed a Notts County game to have goals remains the only time since the opening day in any competition, 12 games in all, that there have been under 2.5 goals in a Notts County match. Such is life. But when they're playing a side who've seen 38 goals in their last nine, 12 of them goals for, by the way, forget 27-20 on the outright, because Notts County and both teams to score is a whopping 100-30.
That's your lot for the podcast then, folks. Thank you everyone that's tuned in and listened right to the end. Thank you to our FWA guest this week, Danny Taylor, whose new book, Kevin Keegan, My Life in Football, is out now at all good bookshops. And of course, you can purchase it on Amazon as well. Thank you to Derek McGovern and Andy Excel for their look at the televised Premier League games, Alex Dunn for his pick in Europe, and of course, Gav Pushlowski, Pete Farris and Al Ross for their look at the Football League. Check out all the betting on the William Hill website at sports.williamhill.com or on the app, and you can access all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com as well. Last thing, if you're having a bet on the football this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.